We aren't enemies. We've been through all that, haven't we? You agreed that we weren't enemies.
There was a mad chill in the brothers. Their eyes narrowed with suspicion. They were fully dressed. Ryan guessed that they probably hadn't even been to bed at all that night, waiting together in the semi-darkness, whispering their plans to each other.
You gonna shoot me? Then go along and shoot the others in their beds?
The question made them turn and stare at each other, and Ryan realized that Titus and Mervyn hadn't actually done all that much strategic organizing.
We'll chill y'all.
Shoot me now, and the noise of the shot will wake the others. And they've got the weaponry to take both of you out of the game without raising a sweat.
But you'll be dead.
Despite being a credible idiot, Titus had put his finger unerringly on the one weakness in Ryan's argument. Posthumous revenge wasn't a great idea. Though, as Traitor had sometimes commented, it was ultimately better than no revenge at all.
Look, there's you me in the mirror, Titus. Haven't seen us in lots of time.
The brothers stared vacantly at their reflections, smiling their identical idiot smiles, heads to one side at the same angle, the barrels of their weapons edging away from Ryan. Ryan dived to his right, reaching for the hilt of the Panga. His fingers pulled the knife off the basin, still sheathed, but his foot slipped on wet tile and he went down. Shards of splintered basin and slicing lengths of broken glass had cascaded all around Ryan. He wriggled a little to one side, out of sight, covered by the central row of basins. Ryan's combat mind was working like a well-oiled machine, calculating movement, action, and time. Obviously, JB, Jack, and the others would hear the thunder of shooting and be out there to help him. That was going to take at least several seconds, which was way too long. The nickel-finished revolvers each held six 44 caliber Magnum rounds. Titus and Mervyn had already fired eight shots between them, but Ryan had no way at all of knowing which of the psychopathic brothers had fired how many rounds.
Go that way!
It was impossible for Ryan to tell which of them had called out. There hadn't yet been a pause long enough for either of them to reload. Ryan's unsheathed Panga was still no use against the pair of matched Smith & Wessons. He reached out quickly with his left hand and scrabbled together a fistful of the larger splinters of broken glass, some of them several inches long, edged like razored steel. He came up into a fighting crouch, trying to watch both ways at once. This kind of combat situation was the one time that the loss of his left eye became a serious handicap. He tried to guess which of them would come at him first, either from the left or the right. Titus appeared in a half-crouch from the left, holding the revolver in both hands, pointing it at Ryan. His lips peeled back from rotting teeth.
Got ya.
Ryan hurled the handful of shattered glass into the man's face. The glass had carved a viscous goo from behind Titus's eyes, spilling it over his unhealthy skin and onto his uniform. He blindly held out a Smith & Wesson. That made 11 rounds fired by the brothers, which meant only one was left. Ryan sprung himself from the crouched position with the sharpened point of the 18-inch Panga aiming at his adversary's thorax. Blinded, Titus waved his hands desperately to try to prevent the attack that even his feeble mind knew was coming. It was easy for Ryan to dodge the flailing fists and get in close. The honed steel had pierced both heart and lungs. Titus staggered away, stumbling backward. As Ryan turned to face Mervyn, he found the other brother was already aiming his revolver at him, grinning wolfishly, oblivious to his dying sibling.
Guard wins!
It was one of those moments. One of the guns still held a live round, the other didn't. Titus weakly pointed his revolver at Ryan's general direction as well.
Guard wins!
Ryan began to cock his wrist, ready to try a final desperate throw of the bloodied steel at Mervyn, knowing that if he lost the gamble, it would be way too late. The bullet had erupted from the barrel of dying Titus's gun and embedded in the cement wall.
12 bullets, all gone.
Guards have lost the fucking redoubt after all this time. You're no help to me, Titus.
Ryan moved closer, trying not to get cut by the sharp splinters on the floor, where the water was already 3 or 4 inches deep.
Of all the guards, of all the redoubts, and all the death plans, you had to come and pick on us.
Just as Ryan judged himself close enough, he caught a glimpse of Jack out of the corner of his eye, the white-haired teenager already gripping a throwing knife in his right hand. JB held the Uzi at the lad's shoulder.
No! He's mine!
Mervin deflected the lunge with his empty gun, but the blade had still opened a deep-lipped cut across his wrist. He took a half-step backward. Ryan fainted toward his stomach, getting Mervin to drop his hands, then swung the panga at his neck. Mervin tried to pull away, nearly twisting the panga out of Ryan's hand. He fell to his knees. Ryan hefted his knife, ready for a third cutting blow.
No need, Ryan. It's over.
Now everyone was crowded into the doorway, even a roomy-eyed doc.
You all right, lover? They hit you?
Nah. A few minor cuts from splinters. They came up behind me as I finished shaving. They planned to kill us all.
I fear that they were madder than the proverbial shithouse rats.
Looks like we'll move on and leave the redoubt a better, safer, and cleaner place.
Ryan turned on one of the chrome taps. He held his hands under the running water, washing clean the dozen or so tiny cuts. To one side of him, the broken pipes were still pumping out more water from the redoubt's huge central reservoir. There wasn't much that could be done to check it, and they'd be leaving in the morning anyway.
Well, back to bed, friends.
How about the bodies?
Just let them lie, son. They aren't going anywhere.
They left the washroom, where both of the bodies were already beginning to float sluggishly on the rising tide of water. After the disturbance, and with the knowledge that the only threat to them had been permanently removed, everyone slept more soundly for the latter part of the night. Dean woke first, lying on his back. He looked around the semi-dark room, puzzled for a few moments, trying to remember where he was. The memory of the insane brothers came back to him, and he sat up in the bed. The big room held two other sleepers. Jack, his hair blazing like a distress flare, was at the far end of the dormitory, lying flat on his back, his hands folded, looking like a carved image on a tomb. Doc was on the far side of the room, also on his back. Dean had been sleeping in shirt and pants, his combat boots standing on the floor by the side of his bed. He swung out his bare feet. The floor was 8 inches deep in cold water. Soon everyone had wet feet, tucked into wet boots. One of Doc's worn knee boots had floated into the passage, intent on making its own way toward the main entrance area. Several of the weapons had also gotten soaked. The Steyr rifle and the scattergun had been laid on the floor for the night, and both were covered in the rising flood by dawn. Once everyone was up and dressed, they began moving towards the open area. The brothers' cooking fire was a mess of drifting gray scum and ashes.
Can't we turn something off somewhere? There's got to be a danger that the water will eventually work its way down and down until it reaches the gateway section. Then we'll be in serious trouble.
Main tanks in a place this size could easily hold several thousand gallons.
Could be worse than that. Not one of my brighter decisions to ignore it during the night. We know the water's coming through the broken pipes out of the reservoir, somewhere locked away in the heart of the complex. Anyone consider whether that reservoir might not be automatically topped up from some external water source?
By the three Kennedys, you mean that this flood will simply carry on and on forever? Until the rivers run dry? That is a bad thought, friends.
Where will the water go, Dad?
Dean pointed at the main doors.
Can't we get them open? Then it can all run outside?
Worth a try, I reckon.
Might be pointless, Ryan.
Why?
We don't know anything about the internal structure of the redoubt. The water might already be flooding down half a dozen levels toward the gateway.
Maybe. But you can see it's rising up against the sec doors. Let's open them and see what happens.
The control panel by the sec doors was battered and worn. Some of the letters and most of the numbers completely illegible. Most importantly, the numbers 2, 3, and 5 were wiped away.
The water's a little more shallow here, Ryan. Over by the dormitories, it was halfway up my boots. Here it only covers the heels.
Some of it'll drain off soon as we get the sec doors open. Dean, ready on 3, 5, 2 to open them up.
Long as the doors aren't at the bottom of a slope, most of them that we've visited have been high up, so we'd best keep our fingers crossed.
Go for it, son.
Ryan stood at the center, where the twin doors met, his Sig Sauer drawn in his right hand. The boys peered at the controls, puzzling out which number was which. The massive single-sec door from the Matran section usually opened upwards, but the double ones that connected the redoubt to the outer world usually slid sideways. It crossed Ryan's mind that the family of guards who'd lived in the redoubt for most of the 100 years or so since Skydark had to have been using the doors for all that time. And it was a sure thing that the sectors had never been serviced. After all that time, it was amazing that they worked at all.
It's moving, Dad!
A sliver of daylight appeared, and Ryan tasted the freshness of the outer air. Breathing inside the redoubt had been unusually good, but it was still tainted with the smell of Mervin and Titus and their cooking fires.
Smells fine.
The others were ranged on either side of him, all with their weapons readied, in case there was any immediate danger outside the sectors. All Ryan could see was an open space and bright sunlight.
Hold it there, Dean. Let's just take a quick look outside.
He walked closer, peering out of the gap of about 7 inches. It was possible to see through a wide arc outside. There was a trampled area, with scrubby undergrowth that looked and smelled like mesquite and sage. Beyond the open area, there were trees, mainly conifers, and in the far distance was range upon range of tall mountains. Ryan could also make out what looked like a boneyard, a stack of rotting carcasses, ravaged by vultures and other predators, standing 20 or 30 feet high. He figured the kills had to have been left there by Titus and Mervin's kin. There was also a huge pile of speckled ash and partly burned branches, the remnants of hundreds of bonfires. Beyond that, there was no sign of life.
All the way, son.
The water flowed faster out into the flattened area, finding its own level by running off in a new-made stream through the fringe of the trees.
Still leaves some of the water pouring off someplace deep inside the redoubt. Maybe they got emergency storm drains to carry it off.
The gap was now wide enough for 3 big war wags to pass through side by side.
Damn. That air is wonderfully fresh. Reminds me of my teen times up in Harmonyville. Any idea where we are?
JB slung the Uzi over his shoulder. He took out his mini-sextant and sighted at the sun, which was already a little way up in the eastern sky.
Phew! Look at the mountains.
Coming from the flatlands of the bayous, Jack was always impressed when jumps took them into the high country. The peaks were snow-capped, rising jagged and serene, highest toward the west.
That one looks like a hooked bear claw. I'd place a fistful of dollars on them being the Rockies.
I may be wrong, but I'd place a handful of Jack on us being within 100 miles of Harmony. You realize that, Lover?
Could be. Old Colorado, maybe.
Not a bad guess, Ryan.
The Rockies?
JB nodded, concentrating on folding up the fragile little sextant and stowing it once more in one of his capacious pockets.
Yeah, Ryan was right about old Colorado, and you're right about Harmony as well, Christy.
Where are we, my dear John Barrymore? It seems akin to paradise.
Nearest pre-dark ville of any substance was called Glenwood Springs. Near as I can tell, we're a little ways north of there, 4 or 5 miles. I think I recognize some of the mountains around us here.
Then we're not that far from Harmony. We always said we'd visit my old home if we ever got close enough, Ryan.
The other thing that's important to remember is that the school we've been talking about for Dean is also up in these parts.
Harmony first, Lover.
No. We come too far to change on this. The school I've heard of that takes young boys is kind of lodgers.
Boarders is the word you seek, old friend. Bed and board for the lad. Do him a world of good. Some Latin and less Greek and cold showers and a flogging every morning.
Doc, no need to talk like that and try and put Dean off of it.
It was a jest, a small jest. Though I must confess that such a regime did me no harm.
Why can't we go to Harmony first? All of us go. We could maybe meet old Uncle Titus McCann. He'd be good and white-haired by now.
How about your mother, Sonya? Will she still be living?
Likely not. She was not well when we parted. And we parted on poor terms.
Where are the two places exactly? I'm certain it should be possible to visit both.
No. I've set my heart on Dean getting something partway to a decent education. And that comes before everything. You can all go on to Harmony, and I'll meet up with you there.
I'd like to see Harmony too, Dad. Couldn't we just visit?
No, we couldn't just anything. You keep this up, and I'm going to get really pissed. This school is for a year or so at the most. When we all come to take you away again, then we can all go to Harmony together. It'll be something for us all to look forward to.
Aw, Dad, why can't we just go...
God damn it!
Sorry, Dad.
All right.
Still, nobody told me precisely where the school and Harmonyville are set.
From what I've heard of the school, it's back on the road to Leadville, off Old 82.
Harmony's that direction.
Christy closed her eyes, as though she were visualizing a map.
We can go some of the way together. Harmony wasn't far from a small ville called Fairplay, high up at the head of a steep trail.
That's above Breckenridge, isn't it, Christy? I was taken up that way to ski when I was about 13. My father's brother, Josh, took me there. The skiing was all right, but it was triple snobby around there in winter.
Ryan was already regretting his outburst of temper at his son and at Christy, and was now looking for some way of trying to build bridges.
My recollection of being around here with Trader is that there are backcountry trails south from Glenwood Springs, then heading east up and over the high country towards Leadville. In summer, you could get the wags over a dirt road towards Breckenridge. So maybe we can go some of the track together.
Sounds good to me, lover.
Right. We best close the sect doors.
What about the water? We have no way of knowing how much more liquid is going to flow from the broken pipes in the bathroom.
It is not unreasonable to assume that there might indeed be some connection between the main tanks of the redoubt and some external supply. As long as it flows out one end, then it could, mayhap, keep gushing into the other end. It could go on until all of the water in Colorado has filled the redoubt from its top to its basement.
And flooded the gateway.
I don't believe that the builders of these redoubts wouldn't have taken precautions in the case of flooding. Wouldn't make sense, would it?
Now, these were the same people, or their superiors, who were responsible for the red buttons being pushed and civilization disappearing. Never, ever underestimate the capacity of the government official for behaving like a headless chicken.
So you're saying we should go straight down and make a jump out of here?
Nah, we know where we are. For the sake of Dean and Christy, we should make the most of this chance jump to explore some. If the redoubt floods completely, then is that so terrible?
I guess not. We know the locations of close to 30 gateways, and most of them are still functioning. We could always step it out and find another one for a jump.
Never did too much jumping in the war wag days.
Yeah.
So we're gonna do some walking.
Ace on the line, lover. We're gonna do some walking.
The township of Glenwood Springs is only an hour or so south of here.
That'll be our first destination, then. Close the doors.
It was a heaven of a morning. The sun climbed gently through a cloudless sky. The temperature was comfortably in the middle 60s.
Upon my soul, I had forgotten how thin the air can be up here.
Reckon we're probably close to 8,000 feet.
Dean had wandered a little ahead.
Hey, come look at this!
Everyone walked further up the path to catch a glimpse at what had gotten Dean so excited. At first glance, it seemed as if they'd made a time jump. The holiday resort of Glenwood Springs looked just like it did before Skydark and the long winters. The main streets with their stores and motels, the freeway scything through the town from east to west, running alongside the frothing Colorado River, with the railway line also following along the bottom of the deep gorge. It was only when your eyes became focused that you saw that the ville was actually a ruin. Most of the buildings were roofless, and no automobiles or trucks rumbled along the streets. Only a handful of people could be seen, moving slowly around. The freeway had become riven and corrugated by quakes and the passing of time. By looking toward the east, it was possible to see where a big elevated section had totally collapsed, permanently blocking Old I-70. The railway line was forked and buckled, and long stretches of the iron rails were missing. Only the river remained virtually unchanged.
Must have been a nice ville once. Might find some food down there.
Do you ever think about anything beyond your stomach?
Nope, guess not.
Let's check it out.
The two-lane blacktop that led from the redoubt vanished in less than 50 paces in a sheer scarp face, where the land had dropped away for a mile or more, taking all of the pavement with it. The friends scattered around for an alternate route. They picked their way along a narrow deer trail that seemed as if it would take them to the bottom of the valley.
Plenty of game here.
They'd seen two separate herds of deer during the 4 miles or so they'd covered since leaving the redoubt. Ryan had been tempted to bring the Steyr to his shoulder and bag one for the pot, but he didn't want to risk drawing anyone's attention. They passed a couple of children within a quarter mile of the ville. The friends nodded to the children, though the guarded faces told the story of their suspicion of outlanders.
That long building must have been the hot pools in the bathhouse.
I was here just the once, fishing with my father. Must have been in 87 or so, when I was in my late teens. The thing I remember best is that the town seemed to be still in mourning for the recent death of Doc Holliday, part-time dentist and full-time shootist.
One who rode with the Earps? Dark night, Doc. You mean you were within a few months of actually meeting up with Doc Holliday?
I do indeed, John Barrymore. It had been devilishly cold, and they couldn't get him up the hill to the cemetery, so they buried him down below. The grave marker tells all that he died in his bed, which I believe to be true, him being consumptive and all.
Everyone turned to watch a six-wheel wag, its bodywork a patchwork of rust and green and blue paint, roll past. Black smoke poured from its exhaust.
Give it about 20 miles before the pistons come out through the side of the engine.
Maybe we can get hold of a wag to transport us to the school.
To transport us to Harmonyville, lover? And what does get hold of mean? Steal?
Probably. Let's go and scout the ville.
The hike from the redoubt had taken longer than Ryan had anticipated, and it was close to noon when they eventually found themselves in the center of the ville. Most of the damage to the buildings appeared to have come from the passing of time, rather than any nuking.
Could have used neutrons, just taken out all the life forms and left most of the ville standing.
Makes sense.
From above, it looked as if the old resort town of Glenwood Springs had once held a population of around 7,000. From street level, Ryan doubted more than 100 people lived there. Most of them looked like hunters and trappers, dressed in untreated skins and furs, despite the warmth of the day, hurrying by, often crossing the street when they saw the group of strangers. Most of them were armed with long-barreled muskets and bowie knives sheathed at their belts. Ryan spotted a limping man with a sallow complexion.
Excuse me, is there a good place to eat in the ville?
Only one place to eat in the ville, Outlander.
The man looked at their array of weapons.
And they'll do you a good trade deal for a few of your bullets.
Where?
Ma's place. Block down to the north and along that blacktop, past the Happy Trails store.
Happy Trails advertised itself in faded, sun-blistered lettering as being the Roy Rogers Emporium for all Western memorabilia. Its windows were long smashed in, and its empty doorway gaped like a toothless mouth. Across the road from them was the wrecked frontage of the Sombrero Eatery, which still carried a faded poster in the unbroken corner of its window, proclaiming that it was the hottest plateful in all Colorado. Western Books was the last store on the opposite side of the wide highway. Like all the others, it had been smashed open, and all of its stock long taken. Mildred shaded her eyes against the bright sun to peer into the dark interior.
Who in all Deathlands would want to steal books?
They bind good.
The Nazis discovered that about 150 years ago.
There's Ma's place. Boy, I can smell good food already.
Ma was a 300-pound transvestite who looked as if she hadn't shaved for a week, thick black stubble breaking through the layer of caked powder. She was wearing a short black dress with a hem and collar of yellow-brown lace that could possibly once have been white. Clouds of crimson sequins were scattered around the shoulders and bosom of the dress. Ma's shoes looked as if she'd rescued them from the Wizard of Oz. More red sequins decorated the high heels.
Just sit yourself down at the big table. Plenty of room here right now. Not many folks care to eat the big meal at the mid of the day. You Outlanders got some good jack, or are you able to trade with me?
Ma's mouth was a tiny cupid's bow of scarlet, and his eyes dripped mascara down his dimpled cheeks. It was difficult to tell if Ma was wearing a wig or whether his hair had been dyed the coppery blue color. Ryan sat at one end of the scarred and scratched table. He pushed away a brimming ashtray and a plate smeared with grease and shreds of bacon rind.
Trade.
Bullets?
Could be.
You guys got some 9mm FMJs on ya?
Could be.
Are we sure about this? We could always go and catch or shoot something.
I'm hungry now!
I'll feed you all, much as you like of anything, for 50 rounds.
Ryan pushed back his chair.
We'll be going, thanks.
30 rounds?
I don't believe so. We both know what Full Metal Jacket rounds from Predark are worth. One's worth more than a meal.
Give me 10 rounds and I'll throw in a beer.
Getting closer.
7? One each? That's my bestest and lastest offer.
What are you offering?
Oh, anything you like, stranger.
Food.
Menu's on the board over there. And there's today's brunch special.
What's that?
Venison.
How's it cooked?
Jesus Christ, you picky bitch.
Watch your mouth. I asked a fair question.
Oh, did you? Well, it's cooked by being roasted and it's served with whatever vegetables and bread we happen to have out in the kitchen. That satisfy you, lady?
Dean was struggling to read the ill-scrawled menu.
Writing's hard to make out.
Well, kiddo, you want to catch up on your reading and writing. I can read the board easy enough. It says meat and fish and deer. Oh, all of them's roasted, sweetie.
What is the soup du jour?
Soup of the day. And that's whatever flavor's in the pot, old-timer. Last time I'd looked, it was kind of vegetables with peas and corn and tomatoes in it. Doubt it's changed since the day before yesterday. Not without someone telling me, of course.
We'll have the deer, with vegetables and bread and some beers and a pitcher of water.
Well, let's have the bullets first. No pay, no eat.
After the meal. No good, no pay.
Man.
Ma lumbered off towards the kitchen. He quickly returned through the battered pair of batwing doors with a dozen brown bottles of beer. The beers foamed and frothed out under the table. In Ma's other hand, he held a wooden platter of bread with some rancid unsalted butter.
Meat'll be along later.
He turned around and walked back towards the kitchen.